The home of the Suns run to the championship. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station, and the Arizona Sports app. Suns playoff coverage presented by Four Peaks Kilt Lifter. Bickley and Murata talk Suns in the Western Conference Finals. Now.
I think what you're seeing in this, in this Brooklyn-Milwaukee series, right? Like, health is the main point here as far as whatever team is healthy at the end of the day, you know, is better suited here. And the longer that series goes, it's the risk of a guy going down, especially with Donovan, who's still, I think, nursing that ankle from the regular season here. Is that, yeah, I mean, you want this series to go six or seven games. You want it to be dragged out, comparable to that Clipper Maverick series here. So, yeah, that's the big thing that you want. I think you pick for it to go long first, and then I think you can figure out if you want to, you know, play a Jazz team or a Clipper team.
That is Bobby Marks, ESPN NBA front office insider, on with Burns and Gambo yesterday, saying what we all believe, that better if that Jazz Clipper series goes long. It's certainly going down that path, tied at four, going back to Utah for game five. Now, every game in that series has been won by the home team. I don't know if that continues. Last night, very impressive performance by the Clippers, the way they came out and handled business. They held the Jazz to 13 points in the first quarter and never looked back.
Yeah, they really let their intentions known right out of the gate last night, and I think that it kind of was a couple of really strong counterpunches to a couple of good performances from the Jazz in Salt Lake City.
Yeah. So it's not, I still don't find it easy from a Suns standpoint to determine what opponent I would like next.
Mm-hmm.
I will admit, watching that game last night, it was impossible not to say, yeah, the Suns would mop the floor with the Utah Jazz the way they're playing right now. But you look at the Utah crowd, could be a big factor. As the one seed, they would have home court advantage for four of a possible seven games. You get that. Bobby Marks said it, and Donovan Mitchell is affected somewhat by that ankle injury, but it's not really affecting his output. He scored at least 25 points in every playoff game. He's riding a streak now of six straight games with 30 or more. In the loss last night, he had 37 points. He also had a 45-point game against the Clippers in Game 1. I think when you look at the two teams, he's obviously the best offensive player remaining as a possibility. And that's saying something, because Paul George can be dynamic. Kawhi Leonard can be dynamic. But how would you feel about the Suns matching up with Donovan Mitchell? I mean, you would expect Mikal Bridges would get the assignment on him, mostly.
Yes. Yes, you would, and I agree with you that he is the hardest individual player to guard on either one of those two teams. Mm-hmm. If you were going to rank best offensive weapons, Donovan Mitchell's one. But to me, here's where I draw the line. I draw the line because the defense that the Clippers can throw at Devin Booker, and on top of that, just the Clippers' mindset. I believe the Clippers believe that they can handle the Phoenix Suns, and it takes them to a different place. So I think the Phoenix Suns are not scared of either team.
I agree.
But I think the Clippers feel like they own us.
Whereas the Jazz might look at the Suns and say, wow, they got the best of us this year.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And then I also like the scenario of in the Western Conference Finals opening on the road, because this is a big deal for both franchises. And whoever opens that series at home is under a ton of pressure to hang on to home court advantage. And I think the Phoenix Suns, coming off a week or plus rest, would be in perfect position to go into Salt Lake City and win a game there. And I think they've got the kind of guys who relish that kind of challenge. So the idea of getting up on an opponent and stealing home court advantage, I could see the Suns doing that one game in. And so I could be way off on this, but I do not like, and I am not comfortable with, the Clippers' mindset and comfort level when playing the Suns. And this has nothing to do with the Suns or any deficiencies they might have. It's just about their attitude.
Yeah. Here's Bobby Marks on the Clippers and them, the way they're playing right now.
I think they went back to it when they put Batum back at the five and went away from, you know, going big against going against Utah, and that basically allowed the floor to spread, open a little bit more, and kind of get Paul more involved, and the lane wasn't as clogged as with Zubac out there. So tonight's going to be interesting. I mean, it really is, as far as if they can tie the series. If Paul and Kawhi are playing like they did in Game 3, they are going to be a tough out. I don't care how good Utah is going to be. And that would be my concern if you're Phoenix, because the Kawhi effect, right? No offense to Donovan Mitchell and that group in Utah. There's no Kawhi Leonard on that team. A guy that you saw in that Game 6 in Dallas can take over a game on both ends of the court.
Yeah, and as you look again, the momentum of this series, it would be hard to say you don't see the Clippers winning this series, even though two of the next three games could be in Utah. How much of the fact that the Clippers have never played in a conference finals in their entire franchise history?
I didn't even know that.
They've not. Last year, of course, they blew the 3-1 lead against Denver in the second round. 2015, 3-1 lead against the Rockets, blew that lead. The year before, they were 2-2 through four games with the Thunder, lost the next two. They were 2-2 in 2006 with the Suns in that series that went seven. Suns beat them to go to the Western Conference Finals. There seems to be at least some sort of invisible wall that prevents the LA Clippers from getting to the conference finals.
They look
like the better team right now. But there's always been this inherent goofiness with that organization.
Yeah, no, you're right.
And when you say inherent goofiness, you have to point at number 13, Paul George, do you not?
Yes, you do. And I think that he is one of the least trustworthy superstars in the NBA in terms of his erratic performances, particularly in the clutch. But again, against the Phoenix Suns, there's always seems to be an elevation in his play when it comes to playing the Suns, for whatever reasons. I think I've got a good idea why.
Yeah, I mean,
there have been a lot of things said between him and Devin Booker.
Sure.
You've heard a lot of them.
I got a front row seat for one of those incidents earlier this year.
Yes, you have.
John Barry, ESPN NBA analyst, was on with Doug and Wolf this morning. He was asked, hey, if you're the Suns, who do you want?
I'd probably want to play Utah, just because, I mean, the Clippers have two guys that can single-handedly win a game, and Utah's got one. Yeah. Now, I'm not discounting the rest of their players by any means. I mean, Jordan Clarkson, Joe Ingles, Gobert, you know, Bogdanovich, they're all capable of big games. But, you know, Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, as we've seen in the last couple of games, they're game changers. They have opportunities to just win games outright. So I just think the Clippers are more talented from top to bottom. And either way, it's going to be tough. But I think Phoenix has got to be ecstatic with the way they're playing. And obviously what Chris Paul's doing is incredible. I mean, what a game he played. That was unbelievable. I mean, 2 years ago, he was written off before he went to OKC. Like, okay, nice career, Chris. Thanks for coming. And now the guy's leading this charge to a team that has a real opportunity to win a championship.
John Barry said something interesting there. The Clippers do have two players that can beat you, take over any game. The Phoenix Suns also have two players that could take over any game.
Yep.
We saw them both really kind of do elements of that in Game 4 against Denver. Here's another thing to consider that has been part of this discussion over the last week or so. Who do you want to play? The Jazz, they got that rabid crowd, the Clippers crowd, a little docile, a lot of cardboard cutouts. That's not the case anymore either, because today, June 15th, is reopening day in Southern California. There are no restrictions in terms of large groups attending sporting events anymore. So there will be a potential of 20,000 people at the Staples Center for every remaining playoff home game.
Yeah, and that's a game changer to me. That really is. So the one thing that I enjoyed about, or if I were going to make that famous pros and cons list that we were always taught when we were kids, well, make a list. I look at that, and that was the only thing that made me prefer the Clippers.
Yeah, because last night, I mean, even watching that game, high stakes, game four of a Western Conference semi, that crowd was far from into it, I thought. Did you pick up any vibes from that crowd last night?
No.
I didn't.
None at all. And I think that's the one thing that might change. It will change.
I think I finally come to the conclusion.
Yeah. Utah?
I want the Suns to play Utah.
Yeah, it's never easy at this stage, but that just to me seems like the best matchup. But then again, I was completely wrong about the Lakers. Completely.
Well, that's the other thing to consider in all of this is, you know, the focus being on the opponent is so great right now. But the Suns themselves are not the same team that faced the Clippers in the regular season. They're not the same team that swept Utah in the regular season.
Yeah, that's true.
They're playing with a different kind of intensity right now. Now, we all agree that this week off is going to be beneficial for them, but regardless of who that opponent is in game one, can they flip that switch again? I think that'll be interesting, too.
Yeah. There's just something really hardcore about Kawhi Leonard, especially in clutch situations. I would not want to play him in the Western Conference Finals. That's just me.
About that time off issue, here's another one from John Barry from Doug and Wolf this morning on what's important when dealing with that much time off in this scenario.
I think it's good for Chris Paul. Other than that, I don't think anybody on that team, who's it going to bother? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think, you know, you rather keep going. They're going so well. What have they won, 7 in a row?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you want to keep playing. You know, you get into a groove. It's the best when you just play every other day, you know, and we're going good. You play the game. You get the next day to recoup, get in the ice bath, do what you got to do, get your body right, play the next day, and keep it going. But it's okay, you know. Take some time. You know, you play some, maybe some scrimmages, bring in some referees at some point, about 3 days, just to get try to get some sort of game type situations. But I don't think it really matters one way or the other.
Yeah, here's another one from Dennis Scott from NBA TV. If he was a member of the Suns, who would he want to see in the Western Conference Finals?
It's a tough call. I mean, I think in Monty's case, I just want to play. Obviously, you might say, hey, help the Clippers win. Now I get home court. You know, you play that game. But I would want the Jazz to win because I want to see Rudy Gobert and Ayton go at each other.
Right.
I want to see two old school bigs play the pick and roll the right way, move
Donovan
their feet.
Donovan and Devin. And young
two
stars.
Young stars.
Yeah, that's fun.
You got the old vet. They got old vet Mike Conley over there. I mean, obviously, Mike Conley's not the same age as, you know, as Chris Paul, but it's two point guards.
Is he not Mike now?
I think Chris Paul might have him by a couple years, though. I think Chris Paul's 36, Mike Conley's 33.
You are right, 33,
hey,
yes.
Hey, baby, we do this. No, it's easy. Right. But my point is, that'd be fun. Two old school point guards that love the pick and roll. And
I had made the point a couple years ago after the Suns got DeAndre Ayton and they already had Devin Booker in the fold that Utah was a team to look to kind of build that template around. And there are so many similarities between the way these teams are constructed.
No doubt about it. They're almost carbon copies of one another.
Yeah. Yep. It would be fun to see that in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Now that we've put the support out there for Utah, you know what the Utah Jazz do? They always disappoint you, don't they, Bick? While we've been talking so much Suns basketball through this run in the Western Conference semifinals, the Aaron Rodgers story has not quieted down at all in Green Bay, Wisconsin. He did not show up to minicamp. There's been a lot of twists and turns, including this statement from Mark Murphy, who is the president of the Green Bay Packers, speaking to a group in Wisconsin.
Some of you may have realized we have a situation with our quarterback. I don't know if you've... That's my attempt at humor. Sorry. So all I'll say is, in terms of Aaron Rodgers, obviously he's a tremendous talent, reigning MVP. And we've been working with Aaron for a number of months to resolve some of the concerns that he has. But we remain committed to having him as our quarterback for, 2021 and beyond. I'm often reminded, though, we have Ted Thompson, I think most of you know, just a great general manager who passed away earlier this year, often talked about Aaron that he's a and it wasn't just Aaron, a lot of different players, he would say, he's a complicated fella. So I'll just say that.
That made a lot of headlines.
Complicated fella?
Yeah. And he tried to temper it at the... Well, not just Aaron, but a lot of players.
He's basically calling him a pain in the backside.
Yeah,
is what he's
a
doing.
Complicated fella, which I don't think is an inaccurate description of Aaron Rodgers.
But it's
certainly
not a term of endearment.
No, and not in this situation when you have 100 pounds of garbage in this whole scenario piled up on each other, and you're just adding more garbage on the top of the heap.
That's very true.
So there's a lot of people, including Adam Schefter from ESPN, who said on Get Up the front office for Green Bay just continues to make this worse at every turn.
Yeah. I've heard his former teammate James Jones comment, relax. But I've also gotten texts that say Aaron is strong as hell on this. So I don't know which is right. And I think that brings us back to where we were before. We're going to find out shortly before training camp. And again, my understanding is that the Packers officials still are trying to go meet with him again. Maybe they've already done that, for all we know, post-mandatory minicamp. But I think the comments of Mark Murphy, to bring it back to that, I think this puts him right in the mix. Up until now, people have wondered about how Aaron Rodgers feels about the general manager, Brian Gutekunst, and I think that this puts Mark Murphy square in that conversation, which he probably should have been all along. When Aaron Rodgers is upset with the people and the culture, I think it starts at the top. It's not just the general manager, and I think these comments now put Mark Murphy square in that conversation of that circle of people that Aaron Rodgers is not entirely happy with in Green Bay.
Yeah,
yeah, I'm entirely fascinated every time I hear Adam Schefter speak on this subject, because it is my belief that Aaron Rodgers clearly is his source.
Mm-hmm.
And that thing didn't go down on draft day the way it did without Aaron Rodgers being the guy.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And Adam Schefter
wasn't the only guy that he contacted, by the way.
Not at all. Not at all. But Adam Schefter carefully tried to walk away from that as if it were just an accumulation of information that suddenly he had an epiphany on draft day that, oh, wow, when I put all these texts together, he wants out. So when I listened to that last soundbite, he's very careful in saying, hey, yeah, they might have already talked. But sources tell me that Aaron Rodgers is strong as hell on this, but I'm not sure which is right. Yes, of course you know what's right.
Yeah.
Because you're getting it right from the player.
Adam Schefter also referenced what James Jones, Aaron Rodgers' former teammate with the Packers, who now is with NFL Network, said. In case you don't know exactly what James Jones said, here it was.
Pump your brakes and just relax. Listen, I have a very good relationship with Mark Murphy. Mark Murphy has a very good relationship with all of his players. Listen, he still calls me to this day, checking on me, checking on my family. And that's what I'm going to say about Aaron. If you have a relationship with Aaron Rodgers, no, he's not a complicated fella. And that's what anything. You are talking about the future of a Hall of Fame quarterback's career. Yeah, it's going to be complicated. He wants some things, you want some things. So it's going to be complicated, but listening to Mark Murphy talk, I am not reading into it too much. I'm pumping my brakes, MJ. I am relaxing. Don't read too much into it. I know Mark personally. Mark loves all his players. And yes, this situation is complicated.
Yeah, he said something there. If you have a relationship with Aaron Rodgers, it's not complicated. The whole crux of this is that the general manager of the Green Bay Packers, Brian Gutekunst, apparently doesn't have a relationship with Aaron Rodgers. Didn't have enough of a relationship to talk to him before the 2020 draft.
Yeah. Oh, clearly. And I'll bet you he has tried to reach out to Aaron Rodgers to try to make this thing go away, and I'll bet you Aaron Rodgers is not responding to him.
Yeah. Well, there's another turn to this today. Aaron Rodgers is doing press for the match that he's going to play in the golf match,
right,
with Bryson DeChambeau, Tom Brady, and Phil Mickelson. And TNT broadcaster Brian Anderson asked him about the offseason. He said, quote, it's been one of those quiet off seasons you dream about where you can just kind of go through your process on your own quietly. That's all you can ask for as an older player in the league and someone who's been around for a long time. You can just enjoy that time to yourself, just relax and not be bothered and not have any obligations or anything going on. That's what this offseason has been about. It's been about really enjoying my time and spending it where I want to spend it and not feeling like I have to go anywhere, not having any responsibilities, but still being an NFL player at the same time. It's been great.
Wow. In other words, he's never stepping foot in Green Bay, Wisconsin again.
You could take it the other way, though. That he's just kind of turning his back on Green Bay because he wants to do what he wants to do in the offseason, and when training camp starts, maybe he'll be there.
Yeah.
Or more ready to talk about things instead of being so abstract about everything.
That's a good point, too.
I mean, there's been enough in terms of being vague to allow us from the outside to look at this any way you choose to.
Yeah.
There's so many possibilities.
I do agree with you. You can interpret that any number of ways, but I think if Aaron Rodgers just wanted his summer off and his summer to himself, he could get that very easily,
mm-hmm.
I would think.
I would think so, too.
I don't know.
You know, you are the reigning MVP.
No, yeah, listen, and we've been talking about this for some time now, and that is this age of empowerment, and it's all over the NBA, and it's not going to stop, and it's coming to all sports, but football is going to be the most resistant to it because of their historical arc and the way that they've always kind of lorded over their players. And so we've heard about it with Russell Wilson. We heard about it with Deshaun Watson. We've heard about it with Aaron Rodgers. To date, the only one who has moved has been Matthew Stafford.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying, for whatever reasons, and as unique as each case happens to be, I do believe that there's a real reticence from any team to kind of go down that road right now.
Well, how much do you think Aaron Rodgers' comments about enjoying his summer and not having the responsibilities of an NFL player, just him putting off even asking for what Matthew Stafford asked for until the right time. Until, hey, I'm done with my vacation now. Oh, by the way, I want to trade.
Yeah.
Make it happen. Uh-huh. Or I want this. Let's sit down and make it happen.
He definitely has a PR strategy. There's no doubt about that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He's a complicated fella.
Yeah, that is so not what Mark Murphy needed to say. That is really dumb.
Yeah. Marcus Spears on ESPN talked about Murphy's comments and what it does to the whole rift between the team and the quarterback.
It's ridiculous. Look, man, Mark Murphy, first of all, you already know how the man feeling. Second of all, like, if it was any chance in you reconciling with Aaron Rodgers, you go public and say something like this, you know the scrutiny is already there. Everybody is already paying attention and holding on to every word that you're saying. Now, I've been trying to tell y'all this has been over for a year, but if this doesn't cement it, if this doesn't make people realize the rift that exists between him and upper management with the Green Bay Packers, then nothing will.
It's like a big, giant soap opera.
Oh, no, it really, really is. But I do think that, okay, the Deshaun Watson situation, that's in legal limbo right now. Mm-hmm. The GM in Texas came out and said, you know, I'm just going to try to do what's best for this team when the moment arrives.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Which is a new strategy for them, by the way.
Russell Wilson's issues with Seattle may or may not get resolved this year. I think Aaron Rodgers is going to be the guy that says, you're trading me or I'm not playing football.
I think you might be right.
We'll see.
I didn't feel that way earlier, but you know, now on June 15th, yeah. I think you might be onto something.
Well, you know what, Vinny? He's a complicated fella.
Coming up next, the Suns in four guy is a legend. If you don't believe us, ask one of the Suns' best players. We'll get into that next. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
The home of the Suns' run to the championship, 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station, and the Arizona Sports app. Suns playoff coverage presented by Four Peaks Kiltlifter. Bickley and Murata talk Suns in the Western Conference Finals now.
There's been a ton of storylines in the Suns' playoff run thus far through two series. Obviously, the stuff that's happened on the court, the injury with Chris Paul, the play of DeAndre Ayton, the play of Devin Booker, Chris Paul's resurgence in the Denver series, the four-game sweep. There's been a ton to talk about. There's also been a ton to talk about off the court with the Suns.
Yep.
From how the fan base continues to generate headlines from the energy and the reaction from around the country when they got kind of their eyeballs and ears on what the Suns crowd was doing at Phoenix Suns Arena. It, you know, some people were calling it healing. It's great to see this kind of energy, the way they affected games, the beat LA chants in the first round, the kid ripping off his shirt in the second round, getting the crowd all pumped up for that game against the Nuggets in game two. But the one story that's not going away days later is the Suns in four guy. We talked about it yesterday. Devin Booker went on Twitter, went on his socials, as he calls them, and he had a screenshot of the guy's face doing the Suns in four when he was pummeling a couple of Nuggets fans in the process.
Yeah.
Said, I need this man's info.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, apparently there was a connection made. And there was an apology from Suns in Four guy, who now we know his name is Nick McKellar.
Yep.
We've done a little research.
We have.
He's from Phoenix, but he lives in Colorado.
Lives in Denver.
Yes.
Okay. Yes, and we also, we have been efforting to get him on the radio, like I'm sure every media outlet in America is trying to do. His reaction to Devin Booker kind of tells you a couple different things, but let's backtrack real quick for a minute, because it's almost been a guilty pleasure, but I've watched that video probably 580 times.
I can't get enough of it either.
And it's not the violence, even though I am kind of astounded how this guy, one row below somebody who sucker punched him, was able just to kind of corral that fight and just pummel that dude.
Yes.
But it was the swing at his friend while he's holding the other guy, telling the other guy, I'm going to bleep your boy up. And then at the end of it, just going, Suns in four. Suns in four. It just hit so well. And so this guy now is a legend on Planet Orange.
You know
There's
why?
No doubt about it.
Because Devin Booker commented on one of his Instagram posts, legend.
Legend, yes. And I love the way you set up this story, because I wrote about this today, and I've written about it three times now, because it's really that big of a story. What the Suns fan base is showing the rest of the NBA is a revelation. This is the next great home court advantage in basketball. It's one of the first to come out of a pandemic, and it's taken everybody by surprise. We had those four boys who went nuts, mm-hmm. and it was so organic and beautiful that it went viral, yeah. after the Torrey Craig alley-oop. Mm-hmm. Then we had the other dude who, during the timeout, took his shirt off and flexed to the point where Suns players were like, look at that dude. These people are going crazy about us.
What's going on in this arena right now? We can't hear anything.
Right, we can't hear anything. And then the DeAndre Ayton thing, the crowd waiting for this team to come back from Denver. And it's just so pure and new. It's phenomenal. This guy has taken it to a different level. And yet, this guy, as Vinny astutely noted, seems to want to back up off of this a little bit. And I'm going to guess it's because he's employed somewhere. And I'm going to guess this is probably a bad look to his employer if he embraces this even more, because you can call it self-defense. You can call it self-defense, and it is to a point. To a point.
How many punches? When you get to what number of punches does it cross over the line of self-defense?
And I don't mean to laugh or glorify violence. I feel kind of gross doing it, but I can't help it. It was because I think that guy in that moment became a very powerful metaphor for this fan base, because he was sucker punched just like the way we all have been with this basketball team. Yet he won. He got up and over the sucker punch, which is what our basketball team has never been able to do before.
Mm-hmm.
But they are now. And so I just think that to have him and all these other Suns fans in this arena on the road is quite something in and of itself.
Well, I got the feeling, too, because he did mention self-defense in the response that he had to Devin Booker, the explanation, and he even apologized, hey, I know I want to represent the fans this way, but he mentioned self-defense. Taylor Kinner up from our news station, KTAR News, followed up with Denver law enforcement and was able to confirm that there were no charges filed in that incident because the parties did not want to file anything. So there might be that feeling, hey, I dodged a bullet here.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, I'll let the legend live underground and I'll move on with my life.
All right, Jesse, what were you going to add?
He's now selling a shirt on his Instagram, so I'm not sure how much he's actually trying
all
to
all right, never mind then.
Well,
then get him on the show, Jesse.
He's trying.
He's selling. So what shirt is he selling?
It's just got an image of him, like, with the Suns in four or fighting, either one of those images.
Well, this is America.
Yeah, you can capitalize on anything. He also changed his name to Suns in Four on on Instagram.
But listen, one of the things I thought was really priceless is if you on some of his social media pages, there's not a lot of information about him, but he did put down a favorite quote. You know what the favorite quote is? Quote, "Let's hug it out," followed by a word that rhymes with which. Let's hug it out, bleep, which is kind of funny from a guy who just pummeled.
Which might be a quote from Ari Gold from your favorite, Jeremy Piven from Entourage.
Oh, my buddy.
Yeah.
My buddy.
And the Piv go way back.
Now, so what's even more crazy about this story is those two yo-yos, those two Nuggets fans.
Yeah.
They cut another video in the parking lot of the Denver Arena that night. You told me about it.
Yeah.
And it basically was, this dude was saying, yeah, we messed that guy up. Uh-huh. Yeah, I got a little scratch.
Yeah,
little
we got some battle scars. You should never show your face again.
Exactly.
You've been disowned by your own fan base.
Yeah. You're exactly right about that. Every Nuggets fan is like, come on, man. You are in the row above this guy. Everyone knows in the art of war, the high position has a gigantic advantage. And you squandered yours and got your backside handed to you.
Yeah, by the way, the Suns and Four guy, when he responded to Devin Booker, had 682 Instagram followers. Now he's got 19,800.
That is outstanding. That right there
is outstanding.
So where else is this going to go? Because this has been one on top of another on top of another in terms of Suns fans taking a stand. Now, no more violence. We don't need to be Philly, all right? But in the moment, that was pretty good.
It's hard to move off the word legend.
It is, because the guy is a legend.
That's coming from Devin Booker, who has the words "be legendary" written on his shoes and tattooed on his arm.
Could you imagine if, say, you made a point on the radio that was so good that Devin Booker's like, who said that? I got to get in contact with that. Do you know how much that guy must be tripping out about everything that's happened to him?
So you're assuming something that was ever said on sports radio would go viral.
Good point.
Hey, we got like 2 hours and 20 minutes to give it a shot.
Right. Yeah, good point. That's right. We do.
Not that we haven't been trying for 20 years at peace, but.
Yeah. Well said.
Yeah, if you follow that thread, that video that those two knuckleheads put out there is infuriating. And by the way, Nuggets fans in general, they're leaning on, remember the troll call we had yesterday about Devin Booker, you backed up when Jokic came after you. There's people clinging to that. Jokic would kill Devin Booker. You think so? In a fight, you think the guy who outweighs the other guy by 100 pounds might win? Is that what you're clinging to?
That's funny. That's really good.
Unbelievable stuff.
No, it is. Listen, I did not expect this. I know you didn't expect this. This brand new Suns fan base is unbelievably cool. And you've seen the change. You've seen this go from 0 to 60 now.
Yeah. I don't know if it stopped at 60. It's maybe 0 to 100 right
point.
Now. I think there's some speed limits being eclipsed here in this whole thing. Coming up next, we'll continue to talk basketball in the NBA, looking into fixing a problem that really makes everybody mad. We'll get into it next. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Hi, I'm Bickley, human cycle relations.
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
Welcome to the greatest show of all time.
It's going
to
be off the hizzy.
It will be lit.
Bickley and Murata.
Yeah, I thought these things were buried forever. Young Jesse has found them, unfortunately. A couple of news and notes from the NBA. Adrian Wojnarowski reporting earlier this morning that the Nets are preparing to be without Kyrie Irving for the rest of the series against the Bucks. Not surprising, but also not great news if you're a fan of the Brooklyn Nets. Do they have fans, by the way? Or was there a Nets fan before last? I mean, I rooted for the Nets once in my life, and that was last year in the bubble, and they failed me.
Here's what I could say about that. I do think that there's the Brooklyn Nets are kind of like the Suns. They've got a young fan base that's growing. I remember when I was in Brooklyn for the NBA draft a couple years ago, there was a really good vibe around the city as it relates to the Nets, and that was before the super team arrived there. Mm-hmm. It's just... It's now a young, hip borough, at least it was when I was there, and it's kind of reflected in their fan base. So I don't think it's not like the Jazz fan base. It's not like the Knicks fan base, but I think it's good.
Okay. I was just
Do you think so? I mean,
I don't know. I don't know if I've ever met a Nets fan.
Yeah. There is something to be said for that.
I mean, again, I've lived my life sheltered in Phoenix, Arizona for most of it, so What are the odds before the super team was constructed? But that's the latest from Woj. He also wrote an article, Adrian Wojnarowski, too, about the NBA Competition Committee and what they're trying to do to curb what we see in every NBA game, and that is to restrict unnatural jump shot motions. He writes, the NBA's Competition Committee met Monday to further explore rule changes to restrict the unnatural motion surrounding jump shots that players are using to draw fouls. The league wants to limit the ability of players, including crafty stars like James Harden, Luka Doncic, and Trae Young, to lean backward and sideways, for example, to initiate contact and get to the free throw line. The NBA shared a video compilation of player examples with the 30 teams that outlines a number of motions deemed unnatural that were used to draw fouls. The league and the competition committee will drill down on specific plays with the league's GMs next week to target examples that will be recommended for owners to vote to eliminate next season, according to sources. I'm all for this.
I love the way you set the story up, because I do agree with you that nobody likes this stuff. The Suns have a couple of guys who take great advantage of this. Chris Paul with the sweeping foul.
I don't think that would be under the purview here, because
it should be, in my opinion.
You know what? My thoughts on that. Everybody in the building, except for the defender, knows what's coming. If you have four team fouls and you're guarding Chris Paul at the top of the key,
and
don't put your hands forward.
Right.
Keep them to the sides. And you won't get called for it, because he's going to do it
every single time. And
that's not a shooting foul. But he gets free throws because it puts the other team in the penalty.
That's exactly right. And he's smart enough. That's, to me, the clarity in which Chris Paul is thinking in those situations. How locked in do you have to be to not only know everything that is going on around you, but to know the moment that guy is now in your space and you can exploit the rule? And I agree with you. This is not necessarily what they're talking about, but the jumping backwards, the leaning sideways. Trae Young does the sideways thing. James Harden has made a cottage industry out of duping officials.
Well, and I think Luka Doncic is a right-handed James Harden.
He's the exact same way.
Yeah.
I think Jay Crowder is really good at kicking out his feet and drawing contact on three-point shots. He's proven that over and over again. I would like all of that out of basketball, to be honest with you. And you know my theory on it. First of all, the less free throws, the better. And I think that's what the NBA is looking at. Because the game stops when you shoot free throws. And when you get too many of them, it's aesthetically bad, in my opinion.
I agree. It does get frustrating from a viewing standpoint when it seems that some players are more concerned with drawing the foul than actually executing the offense or giving yourself the best chance to score a basket.
Yeah, or moving the basketball. Yeah, exactly. And here's the other thing about it that I find kind of hypocritical. If you're an NBA player and you think poorly of NBA officiating, and if you think they're generally clueless clowns on a carousel, say that 10 times fast. if you are an NBA player and you feel like NBA officiating really is derelict at times, then stop trying to fool them. Take that out of the game. Try to be part of the solution instead of exacerbating the issue.
Well,
because when you do dupe an official into giving you a foul call that you gained through an unnatural act, you create and enhance people's dissatisfaction with those officials. Certainly the other team and the other team's fans. And it just raises the amount of animosity that people have towards NBA officiating, which is already at a very dangerous level.
Yes, but here's my question on this. Why did it have to come to this? Why did it have to come to a league memo? You know, this has been going on for years in the NBA. I think it gets worse every single season. Why couldn't the officials recognize what's natural and what's unnatural? I mean, I know, like, 30 years ago, the step-back three-pointer didn't really exist. So there's been advances, obviously, on how players shoot or how they gather themselves to shoot. But you can usually tell when something's unnatural. If you've got a corner three and you've got a defender flying at you, and you jump sideways on the corner three to make contact with the defender flying by you, that's the definition of unnatural.
Yeah.
And it seems like the officials really have a hard time discerning that. And I don't want to get too much on the officials here because there are players, and James Harden is at the forefront of these players, that part of his off-season routine is working on new maneuvers to circumvent the rules of the NBA. It infuriates people.
Mm-hmm.
And to a degree, it makes me mad, too, but I have to give him credit because he's trying new stuff. He's trying to gain an advantage at all times.
Yeah, but again, I think what the NBA is doing here is what the NFL does better than anybody, and that is look at the product from a television standpoint. What makes the most sense to grow our game via television?
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a reason why soccer is so popular among young people, and it's not because it's different. Although that's some of it. And it's not because it's global, although that's some of it. It's because it never stops. Never.
True. But, you know, opponents of soccer as a spectator sport will say, it's just running back and forth.
But exactly.
And I'm not saying I believe that, by the way.
And I think people of our generation have always scorned soccer for the lack of scoring and not seeing the beauty of the continuous action.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is flipped dramatically. The continuous action of a soccer match to people who love soccer more than compensates for the lack of scoring.
Yeah. But,
you don't believe that?
I believe that. But for people who say, oh, there's no scoring, there's constant action. There was an indoor soccer league. There's been indoor soccer leagues for 40-plus years in America, and they never took off either.
Yeah.
And it had constant action and constant scoring.
Okay. Yeah, and you know what? I'm kind of weird like that. It's soccer in recent years has really begun to appeal to me, but it's got to be big stage soccer. It's got to be international or Premier League.
Are you glued to the Euros?
I'm starting to, yeah. Yeah.
I got to root for my guy, Morata, with Spain.
How could you not?
The only thing that's missing is the correct spelling. He's got the Spanish spelling.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. I've got the Italian
that's
spelling.
That's right, you do.
There's also a Japanese spelling. It's a very, very versatile last name.
With roots all over the globe.
Yes. Yeah. I'm like the United Nations up in here. All right, coming up next, Bick's got your blast.
Uh-oh.
It's Bickley and Morata. Is the voice okay?
I think I'm going to make it today, Vinny.
All right. We'll find out next. It's Bickley and Morata live from the Ak-Chan Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.